next week.
I'm Graham Weeks. My first encounter with Francis Schaeffer was actually through his son-in-law, Ranald Macaulay, lecturing in our Hall of Residence at the University of London about 65. I'd never heard of Schaeffer, but I think what Ranald was saying was making some sense, because I was a young undergraduate who didn't know really what to say to the unbelievers around me, to have a proper Christian apologetic. But I think at that stage, and as I said, I think it would have been 65, Ranald said that they had a book coming out, and as soon as the Escape from Reason came out, I got it and devoured it. And that's the same with all of his works. I got them all, read them all, and benefited immensely. But actually meeting Schaeffer himself would have been in September of 69, when he came to Ealing, where we were living at the time, and preached the inaugural sermon for the International Presbyterian Church, in, as I said, September 69. And he ordained, stroke, installed the first two elders. It was Ranald and the late Peter Gear.
Mm-hmm. And at that time, you meet Schaeffer. You're a Christian. You read his books. But what stands out in your mind about the presence of the man?
Well, I'd, as well as reading his books, I'd listened to many of the old 7-inch tapes. In fact, when we moved to Ealing, newly married in 69, I was looking for a church and found that the address that these tapes were sent from mm-hmm. was, as you would say, a couple of blocks away. So round I went, met Ranald, and found they were about to start a church. So we were among the original members of the congregation. But I think he probably came for the weekend, and I just saw him as preacher at that stage. My wife tells me that his sermon was one that had previously been recorded, Ash Heap Lives. I think her memory's better than mine. I couldn't have told you that. But the one outstanding thing about him, and it's the one thing I wanted to communicate today, was what happened, and this would have been, well, this was before 69. This is probably about 66. I and a friend were up in Swanwick in Derbyshire at the conference centre, and we were up for what was then InterVarsity Missions Conference. And there was also a theological students' conference taking place at the same time. Schaeffer was the main speaker. Well, it was late evening, and my friend and I were in one of the large lounges. We were the only two people there, when suddenly this great influx of theological students came in with Schaeffer and taking over the room. And Schaeffer looked at us and he said, "This room's already taken. We'll go and find another one." And my friend said to me, "You've told me many things about this man and many things about his books and teaching, but that impressed me more than anything." And I think I've heard other people with similar memories about the humility of the man, just his regard for other people. And their humanity and integrity. So that is my real one first-hand memorable experience, which I think says a lot about him.
Yes, that this his notion that he was not above everybody else.
Exactly.
And he could have been. I mean, maybe early on, this would have been, what, maybe in the late 60s?
This was late 60s.
And but by that time, he's delivered his Wheaton lectures in 85. So his popularity began to grow at least in the States. Mm-hmm. And he was getting all kinds of invitations to come and speak. And so he could have walked in the room and said, you folks need to leave. I've got something going on here.
But he didn't.
No. So as you've read his books, you've met the man. We see this one thing, his humility. What do you think about as he has emphasized, as he did in those days, what he called true truth?
Yeah.
Realizing, after all, he was dealing with existentialists. It was rampant on campuses here in Europe, about to come to the United States. So what do you think about that concept, as he talked about it?
Well, as I said earlier, I, as a Christian, wanting to be active in witness in the university, and that was School of Pharmacy, University of London, really didn't know what to say to unbelievers. And Schaefer gave me something to say. I mean, later on, I went on to theological studies. I read Van Til, and I thought Van Til was fantastic with his presuppositionalism. But that was really an apologetic which defended the faith and didn't seem to me to have anything particular to connect with the unbeliever. Schaefer did. Schaefer said, you show the unbeliever he cannot consistently live on his unbelieving presuppositions. And so, for example, he had the illustration about the guy who was existentialist and then he fell in love and he was miserable because there was something more important than just his existential beliefs. And, I mean, I would say one of his big... there have been things that he taught that have been a lasting influence. And I don't forget. Mm. Yesterday, our pastor was speaking at midday lunchtime talks in the town hall in Ealing. And he was speaking on Romans 2, and I said to him afterwards, have you read Schaefer on that? And he said, no. I said, well, Schaefer has this wonderful illustration that on the last day, whether it's someone who's heard the gospel or hasn't, or heard the law, it'll be as if God has two tape recorders. One is the moral judgments they've made, and one is how they've lived their own morality. And he will play those two reels and everybody, without exception, will be condemned. Now that's one thing I learnt from what he was saying, whether books or tips. Another one would be the difference between guilt and guilt feelings. And that is so fundamental and so important pastorally. That unbelievers should know there is such a thing as guilt, objective guilt.
Yes.
And that believers should know, no matter what they feel, if they have confessed their sins and believe in Christ, then guilt is dealt with. Now, these are some of the things that have remained with me ever since.
You mentioned his this profound way he had of separating things out, like guilt from guilt feelings,
yeah,
so that they could really be dealt with and they didn't get conflated, which sometimes leads to very difficult to give any answers to when the two get conflated. What do you think his view was, as you've heard him speak, you've read a lot, you've listened, his view of the church?
Well, I know he's Presbyterian.
Yes.
But I think for the sake of appealing to a wide evangelical constituency, he never really pushed it.
Mm-hmm.
It was there in his lectures on the Westminster Confession. And I'm not familiar with the present library, just what the old 7-inch one was. And so that was there. It was obvious also that he spoke forcefully on the subject of the principle of the purity of the visible church, as defined by the Westminster Confession. So much to the, I think, disapproval of some people, particularly Anglicans, he was in favour of establishing Reformed churches where Lebris worked. If there weren't biblical Reformed churches there. And of course, the Church of England didn't meet that criterion in terms of discipline, being such a broad church. It's interesting, I said about him making it that you didn't have to be Presbyterian to come to Lebris. You didn't have to be Christian. And he would take in all sorts of people. And as I said, I think it was in the tapes, and it was in the teaching, but he played it down to some extent, and that is most evident in the absence of his booklet on baptism from his collected works. I spent years trying to find out why it wasn't there, asking Ranald, asking Udo, because I'm a Presbyterian. I thought it was a good booklet. Why wasn't it in the collected works? I didn't know of anything else that was left out. Eventually, I think it's the gentleman who runs Crossway told me it was Schaefer's personal wish. Not that he recanted, but I think he wanted that left out for the same reason he didn't push his denomination to have a wide appeal. I mean, I remember once a well-known Baptist in England saying to me, oh, why has he published this thing on baptism? He's just pushing it on the basis that he's had good sales on other books. And, you know, why is he some expert on baptism? I thought this particular Baptist was somewhat conceited. But, but that, to me, is part of the breadth of the man. And of course you read the biography and he had seen the ugly side of with the Bible Presbyterians about wanting a pure church, and he was always therefore in what he wrote and said was very much concerned that we should not have an ugly orthodoxy. And, I mean, that was one of his hallmarks as well. It was orthodoxy and orthopractice. And the living was as important as the doctrine. It was a bit like the book of James.
Yes.
How can you say you've got one if you've not got the other? And I think he exemplified that in his work and life.
Yes, I think he says somewhere, I forget which book it is, that the hallmark of the Christian is love and holiness.
Yeah.
And he was, yes, he was disturbed, wasn't he, by what had happened as he comes back to the States and what had happened within the Presbyterian, one of the Presbyterian groups. And he was very upset about the way we were treating one another. And there's a sentence he makes. There's a sentence where he says something like, "Beware of habit learned in controversy." And he felt that we then ended up treating unbelievers as we did the infidel. And he thought that was just simply probably he wouldn't have agreed with treating the infidel that way. But yes. So he's a man who really lives out what he teaches.
Yeah.
If man is made in the image of God, then for Schaefer that means every person is important.
And that in part is why I am so appalled at his son's recent writings.
Yes, that's for many of us, I guess, that's just stressful. And what we are hoping is as through this and other means, as to counter some of that, not as a direct counter, but to say, here, wait a minute, this is what people who knew Schaefer.
Yeah.
So listen to them as well. None of us are perfect, right? And, you know, we have an expression, I'd like to have been a fly on the wall. Well, I don't think any of us want to fly on the wall in every situation we find ourselves in.
No. No. The bedroom wall should be behind a closed door.
Yeah. Yes. So as you've thought about Schaefer, certainly you've read a lot of Schaefer, you've listened to Schaefer. What do you think are some of the key ideas that we find in Schaefer that are really important today? One of them, of course, you've already mentioned. How to deal with the unbeliever apologetically.
Oh, yes. I recently heard someone distinguishing between apologetics and polemics. Mm-hmm. Apologetics defending the faith. Thought that from Van Til, but Schaefer gave me the polemic, i.e. showing always the inconsistency of the unbeliever. So although he refused to write something that was systematically apologetic, it's all there.
Yes.
And I have got one interesting insight on that, because people speculate about him and Van Til. Well, the late Ed Clowney told me face-to-face,
yes,
I had them both in my office, and you couldn't put a tissue paper between what they believed and thought. other things from him,
yeah,
you mentioned true truth and the fact that there is objective truth. And it's not just my perspective, has come out more since his time with deconstructional critiques. But no, there is objective truth. And the Bible gives you objective propositional truth. And these are things that are vital for the church. As we've already mentioned, speaking the truth in love while still contending for the principle of the purity of the visible church, but not doing it in such a way that you have second and third degree contamination in your relations. I mean, he appeared to have good personal relations with the likes of Barton and Pike, etc. That's an important thing to learn, that you may very strongly oppose the teaching, but you can have some warmth towards the individuals. I'm now left wondering, you know, what would he have said about some of the burning issues today, particularly homosexuality? Yeah, to say nothing of transgenderism.
Yes, and he did speak. I'm trying to think where maybe a tape or something that I'd heard.
That I can remember him at one point saying that the homosexual agenda, it was a political thing. Which it certainly is, and that it had been taken philosophically to deny a Christian foundation in sexuality. But of course, at that stage, it was never mentioned. When I was at university in the mid to late 60s, not in London, there was no gay societies, and one was an innocent on the matter. I went to see a play in one of the theatres here called The Killing of Sister George, And I had no idea that he was talking about lesbians, because I'd never come across the concept. I was like Queen Victoria.
But he spoke to the issues of his day, and I think some of the things and the way he approached it can help us in approaching some of the issues that we're facing today. We'll have to find our own way through some of these things, because, as you say, they're relatively new to the 21st century. With Schaefer's view of truth, his view of reality, how do you think that, or maybe I should ask the question, why do you think that was so profound at that juncture in history?
I think just because of the existentialism.
Yes, okay.
And as I've said, it's going to go on to postmodernism.
Yeah.
And you might have some inklings of that, but it was coming.
Well, I think I think I'm right about this. Of course I do. But in How Should We Then Live, the last episode, uh-huh. The Age of Fragmentation, was postmodernity.
Uh-huh.
Nobody had called it that yet, but that's precisely what it was. Mm-hmm. So, Graham, tell me, what was your, you know, what did you study? You're at university, so what is your background?
My first 3 years in London, I was doing a pharmacy degree.
Okay.
And I was listening to the second great theological influence in my life, or I should put him chronologically, the first. That was Martin Lloyd-Jones. In my final year, I was concerned where the Lord wanted me, what he wanted me to do when I graduated. And my natural inclination would have been to stay on and do a doctorate. And for that, I needed a 2-1 or a first. But I knew the Lord might want me to go overseas and work in a mission hospital. I was sure he wanted me overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And then through a whole series of providential happenings, one particular hospital in Nigeria came up several times. So by the time I'd started my last year, I knew that the Lord wanted me to go there. And so as long as I got a degree, that was okay. Actually, the Lord was gracious, and I still got the 2-1, disappointed my professor, who, when I turned down the offer of doing a doctorate. So I then spent 2 years at what was then All Nations Missionary College,
mm-hmm.
In Hertfordshire. Did the college course for a couple of years. Fell out with doing an external London degree. I'd been doing that diploma for the first year, but in the second year, I just did the college one and got down to more biblical studying. And having left in 69, we married, and that's when we moved to Ealing, how we come to know Ranald. And we were in Ealing because my wife went to a ladies' missionary college there called Mount Hermon. It subsequently merged with All Nations. But that's how we came to have the links with the church and learnt far more about Schaefer.
So would you hear Schaefer when he would come to
Yes,
the
but there wasn't that many times that okay. he came. Perhaps uh-huh. 2 or 3, other, I don't know. He's probably lecturing all over the world at that
yes.
stage. He probably would come when he got an invitation to England and wanted to see his daughter and grandchildren.
Yes.
But you know, it was all meeting in the Le Brie House at 52 Cleveland Road. And the church met there for several years till they hired a school on a Sunday morning, and then we managed to get our own building in 79.
Mm-hmm. So how has Schaefer influenced your life?
Well, I've already said that. He gave me an understanding of how to proclaim the faith.
Yes.
The importance of orthopraxis as well as orthodoxy to be a loving Christian, not a hard, unflinching orthodox. He's influenced me, I think, also in churchmanship and being Presbyterian and the principle of the purity of the visible church. Being Presbyterian in England is a lonely furrow, you may or may not know. It's common enough in Wales, Northern Ireland and yes. Scotland, but not here.
Mm-hmm.
I think also, we haven't talked about the wider application. The links to Rootmarker and then to Kuiper. He probably prepared me for when we went to Nigeria. It turned out one of my best friends was a CRC missionary and a disciple of Kuiper, and we really hit it off. But, involvement in the political sphere, in other things. And then, of course, the huge thing about co-belligerents and not allies. When we came back to this country in 86, they were just starting to push the homosexual agenda in local government. And I got very active in that and was very concerned that the group we started, called a Parents Action Group, should be open to non-Christians, to anybody who opposed this left-wing homosexual agenda. So, in part, indirectly, he also, as well as influencing my ecclesiology, it also got me into something about politics as well. And I was a local politician in Ealing for 8 years, in an elected position in local government.
Did Schaefer's ideas, as presented, for example, in How Should We Then Live, this idea of connecting the dots, seeing the big picture, ideas do have consequences, did that have any influence on you?
I think so, but it was especially on seeing where your friends were and with whom you could work, even though you may disagree with them on some things. Like, for example, you could therefore be very happy marching with the Roman Catholics against abortion. That wasn't a problem. Whereas that had been, that was a problem. For many in England and just about everybody in Northern Ireland who was Protestant.
Yes. So you were in politics locally?
I was locally in politics for 8 years.
And so I'm assuming how you understood and looked at life and issues in life had been shaped by Schaefer. Not how you might come down on the issue, but how you would think about the issue.
Yes. You wanted to apply your Christian faith in what you were doing. The one really big example of it when I was in local government and would have been, it was in Major's government in the early 90s, they introduced the National Lottery, which I found was appalling.
Mm-hmm.
Conservative Central Office would send a memo to council saying at your next meeting put up a motion supporting what we are doing. Well, Ealing Council never had any such a motion because the leaders of my party then knew I wouldn't have sat quietly. I'd have stood up and denounced what he was doing. Um, And although I would be known in the the council for coming in because of my opposition to the homosexual agenda, the one openly homosexual councillor who was on the other side of the council, he got me to speak at a meeting of what was a homosexual campaign for equality in London, and I think I can take some pleasure in saying that that gives me some comfort that I'd managed to separate the argument against the man with what we were talking about. That is the most interesting public meeting I've ever had to address.
I'm sure.
They sent out a leaflet introducing their group, and it was their speakers was like a list of who's who in the arts and media, etc. And there was only one person on there who would have agreed with me, and that was the late Lord Longford, who was a prominent Roman Catholic peer and opponent of pornography. And they told me they preferred me to Lord Longford because he drank double scotch and I was just drinking whiskey. I was just drinking beer, which was cheap.
So as we bring this to a close, Graham, and you look at things as they are, I'm not talking about dealing with particular issues. What do you think is a major thing that we should be saying to our generation and the generation below us that we would have gotten from Schaefer?
In a sentence, speak the truth in love. Can I also add on some little bits of where I remain critical?
Yes, sure.
You may or may not want to include these, it's your up to you. I think the fact that he was in a parachurch group, that he didn't advertise, he didn't aggressively evangelize in terms of bringing people to Waymo. He sat back and let them come.
Yes, but that was a part of their initial agreement when they started.
But it missiologically.
Okay, right, right.
So it's maybe a parachurch thing.
Right.
When you get a church, the church shouldn't be doing that. The church should be going into all the world.
Right. Point taken.
That did influence our small denomination. And last thing, and here Ranald will totally disagree with me, was that he and his father-in-law and I would part company over eschatology.
Yes.
Okay. So I would follow much more the traditional Reformed line.
That was surprising when I saw that.
I think the Bible Presbyterians had been that way.
I was told that would have been. So I thought when I read that he was pre-trib, premillennial, I said, really? But I suspicioned it from other things that I had read.
And that now leads me on to a final, I think it's going to be a final thing. I think that eschatology led him to wrongly conflate a decline of Western civilization with a decline of the spread of the gospel, which I would describe as a Eurocentric view, if I can include America in Eurocentric.
Sure.
That if you stood back and saw the bigger picture, people in Africa were not then or now thinking that this is near the end of the world. Because the day is just dawning for them.
Yes.
You know, I worked with a mission that 1904 first went to their bit of Nigeria. Their congregations now have an attendance of millions.
Mm.
Nigeria's got more Anglicans than the Church of England. So I think his cultural pessimism
Yes.
was influenced very much by his eschatology. It's the opposite to what Ian Murray writes about the Puritan hope. So I wanted to say, yeah, we don't want biographies that are hagiography.
That's right.
And there are places where there's room for disagreement.
Absolutely.
There's certainly room for disagreement over eschatology.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, again, one thing I've used this in many times preaching. Schaeffer pointed out that when Jesus was quoting for Isaiah, reading in the synagogue,
yes,
he stopped
yes.
before the end.
Yes.
And this is the most wonderful illustration to make people, in my view, humble about authoritarian eschatological mm-hmm. pronunciations. No one
yes.
before Jesus came could know that he was not bringing the day of vengeance of our God.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty certain I got that from Schaeffer. So that was one bit about eschatology we agreed on. Because, as I said, I've used that lots of times when preaching.
Well, Graham, it's been a pleasure, a delightful conversation with you, and helpful, and given insight for me.